You cannot hide behind the flag to cover your racism. And I would tell our Christian brothers and sisters, you can't hide behind your Christian religion to cover your racism.
Welcome to Respecting Religion, a BJC podcast series where we talk about what's at stake for faith, freedom for all in 2020. I'm Amanda Tyler, Executive Director of BJC.
And I'm General Counsel Holly Holman. Today, we're going to pick up where we left off last week, discussing the historic events occurring in our country. And in particular, we're going to talk about the intersection between the call for racial justice and our commitment to religious liberty for all.
Hi, Holly. Good to be with you again on Zoom for our weekly conversation.
Nice to see you, Amanda.
So last week, we spent a lot of time talking about current events. We had quite a week. We discussed the president's first press conference after the public unrest following the killing of George Floyd. We discussed President Trump's walk to the church for a now infamous picture. And this week, we're going to enlarge our conversation about that photo op and Christian nationalism into an ongoing discussion of racial justice.
Yeah, I'm excited about this conversation because it's so necessary. And we know that it's been ongoing, but it's changing and will continue. For our listeners who may be new to this Respecting Religion podcast series, we should note, as you did so well last week in episode 15, Amanda, BJC's work is to protect faith, freedom for all, and it has continued throughout this pandemic with our work across the government, and particularly in this historic busy term at the United States Supreme Court. But we've also used this podcast series to respond to new developments relating to religious liberty stemming from the coronavirus and related challenges. And now we're looking at our work and facing these discussions about religious liberty in the context of a national conversation about race. And, you know, it's one thing that I really love about this work at BJC is that it's not only about defending and explaining and educating people about the historic Baptist commitment to separation of church and state and the fight for religious liberty, but it's really about the importance of understanding religious liberty and how it plays out in our current context as the culture and legal landscape change, and the importance of continuing our work and defending religious liberty today.
Yeah, and it feels so urgent and necessary today to continue this work, to be a bold voice for religious freedom. As a reminder, BJC, Baptist Joint Committee for Religious Liberty, our work dates back now more than 80 years. Our name, which we simplified for our brand as BJC, but the full name is still the full legal name of Baptist Joint Committee for Religious Liberty. It reflects our historic and our ongoing coalition of diverse and various Baptist denominational bodies that have come together to defend and protect faith freedom for all people. As we've talked some about, giving a little basic Baptist education. The Baptist family is not a hierarchical one, but they cooperate in these Baptist conventions and associations for various purposes, including mission-based purposes and other collaborative endeavors. But early in our history and continuing until today, BJC has had cooperation of a number of these Baptist bodies. And since our earliest days, since the 1940s, that coalition of Baptists has included both Southern Baptists and Northern Baptists, denominations that were predominantly white and those that were predominantly Black. In fact, BJC is the first national organization to unite Baptists across denominational lines in such a joint endeavor.
Yes, and although a lot has changed in Baptist life, for the insiders, they'll know what I'm referring to. A lot of shifts in denominations and new groups to reflect changes in commitment to religious freedom and other theological issues. What has always united those who work with us and are part of our coalition has been this commitment to religious freedom that includes free exercise and no establishment, and comes out of this historic Baptist way of thinking about soul freedom and freedom of conscience and relating to the Bible and the Christian story directly. So I think that that's important to note, which has been one of our great strengths in bringing together a diverse group of Baptists.
Yeah, I completely agree. And we're going to talk quite a bit in our podcast conversation today about history. And so I did want to note, as we talked about last week in the reflections piece that I wrote and we put out last week, that BJC is looking at its history too. And we are so fortunate that our colleague, Charles Watson Jr., BJC's Director of Education, is leading us in this effort, as we have appointed a special committee on race and religious liberty to investigate our history and have a better understanding of our cooperation back in the 1940s and the decades immediately after, and what that looked like. And we are not just fortunate to have Charles Watson working on that project, but Holly, we're fortunate to have Charles join us for the conversation that we're going to have here today. Before we bring him in, I thought we could maybe set the stage on where we are right now.
This week in the news, the headlines have talked about continuing protests, and there's been more coverage about the variety of religious voices coming forward. So that's been something that we've watched very closely and welcome, and it expands the conversation and requires us to continue to think about what is the role of religion and religious liberty in this greater conversation about racial justice that we're having now.
Yeah, and I was able to participate in a large display of religious solidarity with the protesters in mourning George Floyd's death last Friday. 16th Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., which a lot of people know about now because there's a section of it that's been renamed by Mayor Muriel Bowser, Black Lives Matter Plaza. And so that's made national news, that particular stretch of 16th Street. But it's been known, the street's been known in Washington for some time as the Church Street, the House of Worship Street, because so many different diverse houses of worship are located on this main street in Washington, including the house of worship that I go to, First Baptist Church of the City of Washington, D.C., as well as First Baptist Sister Church, 19th Street Baptist Church. Confusingly, it's called 19th Street, but it's on 16th Street. And it's our sister church because the history is that our congregations once were together. And then sometime before the Civil War, split into two separate congregations. So 19th Street is predominantly Black. First Baptist is predominantly white congregation. We have come together recently to look at our histories together. All of that to say, we were just two of many, many houses of worship along a 7-mile stretch of 16th Street Northwest to come together to stand outside our houses of worship at 5:45 p.m. last Friday afternoon as bells tolled up and down the street for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. And we did a silent tribute, and it was very moving for me to take part of it, and from hearing from others who were at different stretches along the street, moving for them as well.
Thanks for sharing that, Amanda. That's a great story illustrating how many different religious voices are coming to the forefront and participating in this moment. And with that, let's bring Charles Watson Jr. into the conversation. Charles, it's so good to see you here by Zoom, and I appreciate you coming and talking with us today.
Thanks, Holly. Glad to be here with you and Amanda.
Yeah, Charles, we're so happy that you're here. And I want to share about you with our listeners. Charles Watson Jr. is originally from Millen, Georgia, and has been at BJC for almost 7 years now. He serves as Director of Education, and his work for BJC is focused on expanding the support for faith freedom for all, particularly among our next generation of advocates. Charles is a graduate of the Citadel and earned a Master of Divinity degree at Mercer University's McAfee School of Theology. And Charles is also a veteran of the United States Air Force. So welcome, Charles, to Respecting Religion.
Thanks again. Glad to be here.
So my claim to fame at BJC is that I was here and first met Charles as I spoke to a class when he was in seminary, and at least got him thinking enough about the topic that he later on applied for the job. And so you came into a position that was designed to promote religious freedom for all as you reached out to younger and different audiences. But I'm sure you had your ideas about race and religious liberty and how those topics fit together, even though that was not something that we were specifically thinking about in designing your position and recruiting you to work at BJC. How did you think about race and religious liberty at the time you came to work with us?
Well, as an African-American male, it's always a part of the conversation for me. I just didn't know how I would use it at BJC. I didn't know when. I know there would come a time when it would probably come up, but I didn't know when that would be. I felt free enough to do it coming in with you. And at that time, Brent Walker made me comfortable to be myself with the BJC. And so it's always in my mind. It's just when is the time that it's best for me to say, you know what? I have a voice that needs to be heard in this situation.
Yeah, I think there were several times when you brought your own experience into conversations that helped us look at things differently. And you're right, at BJC, it's a great place where we can all bring our personal experiences and we share stories, and that makes us stronger as well as making us a team that likes to work together. And it was always helpful when you brought in specific issues of race, because it allowed us to address that more directly and not just take for granted that our mission was one that was appealing and spoke to all people.
Right. Well, one quick thing to say is I come from Millen, Georgia. I graduated with segregated proms in 1999. I was the homecoming king, and my friend in my grade was the homecoming king. We had black and white homecoming kings and queens. So I had a history of dealing with racial issues, and then I went to the Citadel, which is another level of dealing with racial issues. So it's a part of me no matter where I go.
We've learned so much from you, Charles, during your time at BJC, and so have numerous young people, groups of students who come into our offices for multimedia presentations, but also students on college campuses and chapel services and other gatherings. And you are uniquely gifted in this way of speaking to student audiences. You seem to enjoy it too. During these times of remote working, you've told me it's something you miss the most, is not being able to be in with these student groups. What do you like so much about it? And it's hard to brag on yourself sometimes, but what about you makes you so good at this, at talking with students?
I'm so good at it, but I'm so comfortable with it because I see it as a way for me to teach and engage. And it's also a way for me to say, hey, you know what? This is my way to push forward the conversation on race, on freedom. One of the examples of the way I do that is when I think about the founding framers. You know, I can talk about them and say, hey, the founding framers that came up with, you know, religious liberty for all these things that say no establishment and free exercise. And I can say great on them for that. But I also can criticize them and say, you know what, while they were doing that, many of them had slaves. Many of them didn't see me or people that looked like me as human beings. So it gives me a place to balance both of those things and educate the youth about it and still be able to uphold some great things, but also be able to say, no, this here isn't right. And we should think about that as we go forward. So that's what's helpful for me. I see it as a way that I can help people and teach them. And I see the sparkle in their eyes or the wheels turning in their eyes. Oh, wait a minute. Let me think about that. How does that work? And so I get excitement over that.
In a way, Charles, what you're saying is, you know, you help people not take for granted what is good and right about our country by reminding them how we have to work to live up to it. And we got a long way to go. And so by bringing that complex history in, you make people think, and we appreciate that so greatly about Religious Liberty for All, and especially right now in this moment as we are talking about race and religious liberty more explicitly.
Well, it's helpful for me, Holly. To be honest with you, it's almost like counseling, because I get to talk about it, I get to reflect on it, I get to see brand new faces that haven't been tainted by certain things in the world, and so that gives me hope that, okay, you know what, we can work through this. But it also gives me a reality of, okay, this is something that continually has to be done.
As Holly noted, when you came to BJC, it wasn't for a particular position on exploring race and religious liberty, though over the last few years, we have evolved somewhat into that conversation, right? That has naturally come up more and more. And now in our present moment, it feels like a central part of what we're talking about in particular. And I wondered if you could talk about some about that evolution of the position and your teaching and thinking as you've been here at BJC.
I think the point when I knew it was going to be a part of my work was in 2015 at the BJC luncheon when Dr. Marvin McMichael actually gave the lecture, and it happened to fall on Juneteenth. And unfortunately, it happened to fall days after the tragedy of Mother Emanuel Church in Charleston, South Carolina, had the shooting with the 9 members being murdered inside of the church. And as he was speaking about the importance of religious liberty and the importance of Juneteenth and the importance of us continuing to fight for justice during these times, it made me understand. He kind of gave me a model of what I need to be doing here as an education and outreach specialist at that time, but as a director of education, my story and what we do here has to have a racial element to it because it's a part of America. And so that was one of the times that it was really influential in my work here at the BJC and set a tone for me as we work toward more stuff in the future.
Charles, I remember that luncheon too, and I've had an occasion to go back and listen to that speech again because of how it really speaks to the present moment. But when I heard him speak in 2015 at the luncheon, I was really moved and challenged by what he did. This is he was at the time the president of Colgate Rochester Crozier Divinity School. And we knew that Reverend Dr. Marvin A. McMichael was a prolific author and leader, and we were honored to have him speak. But it was really striking how he spoke directly to us. He looked at the audience and he said, "I am bringing a message to you today. I'm here in support of your work, and I have a message for you that I think will affect you and, as you look around, your composition." And he was basically telling a mostly white audience that we need to be aware and think about our work in a historical frame. So I'm not surprised at all that was a formative event for you, as it was for me and for BJC, maybe in different ways, but in ways that challenged us and have continued to have an effect on the organization.
So yes, Holly, as you said, it was a challenge to you. It also registered as a challenge to me, being an African-American in that audience, so predominantly European-Americans. I looked and said, you know, what does this mean for me and my work? What do I need to do? I know the history. I had heard of 16th Street Baptist Church in Alabama being bombing and the four little girls. I heard of Bethel Baptist Church and Reverend Fred Shuttlesworth and being bombed 3 times. Even in my small hometown in 1919, at Carswell Grove Baptist Church being burned with actual people from my hometown in it. I knew about that, but this was different. This is 2015 and we're still dealing with a white American going into a sacred place of worship for African-Americans and deciding that their lives didn't matter, decided that no matter if you are praying or having a service and you welcomed me in, I'm still going to put violence on you, strike violence to you. And being that I went to school in Charleston, South Carolina, and the history of Charleston, South Carolina, that this could happen there, spoke volumes to me. And so Dr. McMichael just, he articulated my feelings. He articulated the way I would want to speak to that audience. And then from there, I felt it was my job to pick up the baton and put those things inside of the work that I do at the BJC.
Thank you, Charles, for that really personal reflection and for the work that you've done in the past 5 years after that moment. Let's take a break.
We're back for this conversation, Respecting Religion, and today talking about race and religious liberty with Charles Watson Jr., BJC. And we were talking about the events of 2015, and Charles, that was a really busy year for BJC. You had been on board a couple of years, and we were starting some new programming opportunities to expand your work, including the BJC Fellows Program that we started that year. And as I recall, that was a formative event for BJC in advancing this conversation. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, it was. You know, we were excited about bringing these fellows to Colonial Williamsburg to study religious liberty and theological and legal background of religious liberty. But it also exposed a little bit of a blind spot for us, because our curriculum didn't have all the voices that it should have had. Some of our fellows kind of felt like it was just a one-sided portrayal of religious liberty. And being in Colonial Williamsburg and thinking about the setting of Colonial Williamsburg and what was going on during that time, and to not think about even the religious entities of the slaves during that period. Many times we think about slavery and we think that the people that were brought over here just were blank slates. Like, they didn't have any idea of anything. Some people use savages and use those other words, but those people had religious context to who they were before they got here. And unfortunately, that was taken away from them or stripped away from them or beat out of them. And we didn't have that in our curriculum. We didn't give a voice to those people. Just like they didn't have a voice back then, during our fellows program, we realized that they didn't have a voice at that moment at this time. And so we had to make improvements on that.
Yeah, it's so interesting, because I remember the development of this program was, you know, a competitive program of impressive young adults who want to increase their knowledge and ability to advocate for religious freedom from all different walks of life. And here we hold up Virginia, of course, because Virginia being the home of James Madison, the primary author of the First Amendment, and the Virginia experiment in religious liberty is so important in American history. So in some ways, you know, Williamsburg made perfect sense, but then here it really drove home the point that we were just talking about that Dr. McMichael made for us. You know, you're holding these two things at the same time. And because you're talking to a bunch of smart, young BJC fellows, you know, the conversation kind of burst open.
Right, right. I mean, it goes back to, if you think about that, racism is America's original sin. So how can we not investigate how that shapes our concept of religious liberty? Being in that setting forced that upon us. And I'm glad we had that. Now, I wish we would have thought of it before we got there, but I can say that once it struck us, and once our fellows felt it and we had honest conversations about it, we were able to grow and we were able to do better with that. And I'm glad that that actually occurred.
Me too.
And one of those fellows from 2015 who helped spur us along is Dr. Sabrina Dent. And inspired by that experience, she went on to work with the Religious Freedom Center at the museum and managed a program that we, BJC, and specifically you, Charles, have been on faculty on this particular program called Religious Freedom African American Perspectives Project. It is supported by the Henry Luce Foundation, and as well as the Samuel DeWitt Proctor School of Theology of Virginia Union University. And it partners with five other historically Black theological institutions to bring together African-American seminarians to learn more about religious freedom. It's an incredible project, and BJC has been proud and pleased to be a part of it. I know, Charles, you have taught classes as part of this program. What are some of the main teaching points or takeaways that you've had from teaching these seminarians in this project?
Well, I think the main thing is we want to figure out why religious liberty actually matters to the African-American community. Sometimes we think of religious liberty as a luxury because we're fighting for so many other civil rights and just humane rights, if that's the way to explain it. And so for us to understand that religious liberty means your freedom of conscience, your freedom of thought, and if you don't have that freedom, then all of the other freedoms are going to be taken away as well, or you're not going to be able to exercise those other freedoms as fully without the freedom of thought and expression. It also made a difference into understanding the legal context of the First Amendment, because unfortunately, some of our schools don't focus in on what that means, what that religious liberty means for us in the First Amendment context. We talk about the legal issues, but we also talk about what it means historically from the colonial period to now. How has religious liberty affected, or the lack thereof, religious liberty affected the African-American community? And what can we do to improve upon religious liberty for not only African-Americans, but minority religions inside of the African-American community?
Yeah, you've made that point to me, Charles, about that intersectionality, you know, of the Black experience, minority experience, how that can compound the discrimination or othering, you know, in the American experience. I'm curious about, again, from teaching these different classes and compared to other student groups that you teach at BJC, kind of what impact you see this education having on the students that are part of the program?
I would say the impact to the African-American students that are part of the historically Black theological institutes is that it's a wake-up call to them too. It's a wake-up call that says, we sometimes treat each other how we've been treated by the oppressor. We oppress our minority religious people in our community. We oppress them sometimes because we don't value their voices. And it's almost a taught action. You can see it in the Nation of Islam. You can see it in how there was people that were against one segment of Black people doing this because of their religion. You can see it in today's society, where religion, if you're not deemed in the right religion, it almost brings back our Christians against Christian nationalism, where you have to be a certain form of Christian to be a good American. And it's amazing that that can actually get into the minds of African Americans, even though we've been oppressed in this country. You can easily become the oppressor just because of your religious identity. And so we attack that in our class, and we make sure that the students understand that they don't want to continue that lineage of oppression.
Yeah, Charles, that is really interesting. And it reminds me of differences that I've heard at times. I want your opinion. What are differences that you hear in how people understand the separation of church and state when you talk to different audiences?
Just like many things in American culture, there's a difference between how the African-American community sees it and how European Americans see it. And religious liberty is one of those things. Separation of church and state is one of those things. I can give you an example. In the history of the Black church, African-American church, and that can include more than just the Christian Baptist churches. But the history of the church and the prominence of the minister, where the church was a place where African-Americans can come to get knowledge on not just theological things, but things that are going on in politics, what's going on in the community, what we need to do to strategize to help ourselves in the community. And so those kind of things intermingled. It's not a separation of church and state because our lives depended on the information. So we really didn't see it as violating church-state separation. Whereas in other communities, there was no need to talk about these issues because there are other avenues to talk about these issues. You didn't have to have the church get people together to organize in this way. Even going further back, that the African-American ministers were actually sometimes the most educated people in the community. So there was a burden put upon them that really wasn't put upon anybody else in that community or somebody outside of the African-American community. So when we think about church-state separation, we have to look at the context of where the people were living and what condition they were in that actually made the prominence of the African-American minister. That's why you can have a Martin Luther King Jr. that can actually be a preacher and also be a political figure, but still not get embedded into what the government actually was doing. He still understood it, but still was able to be that prominent educational political person in the church while also separating himself, not getting in bed with the government. He modeled it perfectly.
Right. And what you're saying is like a lot of the conversations that Amanda and I've been having in this podcast, where when you have a conversation with people, you can expand upon what terms mean. And the separation of church and state is a shorthand for religious liberty. Sometimes that's how we use it. But it also, there's a legal, it also describes a legal situation in the Constitution. And what you're saying that you get to explore in these classes really is so useful to think about how religion works in society and what the relationship is between religion and government. Not just from the legal standpoint, but culturally, and helps us think about what kind of country we are and how we can live up to the promises of our Constitution.
And I think sometimes that term separation of church and state, not only is it misunderstood sometimes as a shorthand, but there's also a history of it being used against certain groups for their aims. So groups that maybe in other situations would not have a problem with government-sponsored religious exercise, for instance, suddenly were stalwart defenders of the separation of church and state in the civil rights movement when you saw African-American ministers using their places of prominence in the community to cry out for justice, right? And so I just wonder if some of that learned experience in history informs some suspicion about separation of church and state and white groups promoting it now. I don't know. What do you think, Charles?
I think you're spot on, Amanda. I think that when it's been advantageous for certain communities to use that, they used it. And when it was used by the African-American community, it was, no, you can't do, no, that's not for you to use in that way. And I think that permeates through much of our society, not just religious liberty. And that's why this conversation is so relevant. That's why we have to investigate in it to a deeper level, because we stated before that racism is a part of the culture here in the United States. So of course, it's going to be a part of the religious culture, unfortunately, here in the United States. And to try to separate those two, like they never intermingled or never were brought together, would be disingenuous. I mean, you can't do that. And that's why we have the fights that we have now with certain religious groups. It's still about racism. It's still about not seeing someone as equal to you and not treating them as such.
Charles, that just reminds me how important these conversations are and how we have to separate our conversations about what we're talking about. Are we talking about separation of church and state in the context of our culture and how we experience church and church leaders and interactions with government? Or are we talking about the legal concepts? And BJC has been in these conversations from our beginning. We affirm people bringing their religious perspective to the public square. Of course, separation of church and state does not mean that we don't talk about religion and religious diversity in the public square, but it does mean that the institutions of religion and government need a certain amount of separateness for each to do their work and to work together where that is appropriate. These conversations and where we are today also point out that the religious freedom that we have in our country has not been used in a way to effectively fight the racism that we are still suffering from.
And I think some of those principles and that reality, Holly, are some of what motivated the Christians Against Christian Nationalism project, which you referenced, Charles. And, you know, as you were talking about it, I reflected, some people recoil against the term Christian nationalism, or being labeled, an idea being labeled as Christian nationalist, in the same way that people recoil against the term racism or being labeled as having a racist idea. And there is a parallel in that both are so entrenched in our society that it's hard to even recognize sometimes what is racism and what is Christian nationalism. But I wanted to get your perspective, Charles, on a particular aspect of the Christians Against Christian Nationalism statement that has garnered the most controversy, particularly from those who detract from the statement. And it is an affirmation that we make that Christian nationalism often overlaps with and provides cover for white supremacy and racial subjugation. And I would just love your perspective on what that sentence means to you.
To me, it's a historical fact in my eyes that has covered racism. Christianity in this context has been used to cover blatant racism from the beginning of this country and continually to present time today. And they connect it with patriotism. Like, you have to be a Christian to actually be a patriot. And if you're not Christian, then you're not a patriot. And again, as an African-American, that's already starting to other. It's othering from what the idea of Christianity was when this country was founded, and how Christianity saw my black body is what Christianity is now. And to try to wrap that in patriotism to say, in order to be a good American, you have to be a good Christian. Well, we all know that that goes against everything that we stand for at BJC, with faith, freedom for all. We all are able to have our faith, and that doesn't take away from our citizenship. It doesn't take away from our patriotism, but it's being used in many Christian circles to cover up the underlying problem of all this, and that's racism. I heard people say you cannot hide behind the flag to cover your racism. And I would tell our Christian brothers and sisters, you can't hide behind your Christian religion to cover your racism.
So Charles, unfortunately, our time for the podcast is drawing to a close. Holly and I get the chance to have conversations like this with you often, and I'm glad that our listeners got the experience as well today. I'd like to close, last question for you today is just, why is religious freedom so important to you personally?
Great question. It's important to me because as a veteran, the United States military, as a person that identifies as African American, I want full citizenship for myself, and I want it for everybody. And for me, that starts with my freedom to believe and think and have freedom of conscience as I feel fit. Religious freedom is important to me because I have to have the freedom to say yes, say no to religion, to change my mind. I could think something one day, and the next day I get new information. I'm like, okay, that. Without the freedom of religion, I can't do that. One of my sayings that I like to tell people is, I don't believe in having a biblical noose around my neck, and I don't believe in having Christian shackles around my feet. I have to be free to believe how I believe and be accepted in that way. And I want to give that liberty to everybody. And I want to extend that liberty to everybody. So the one thing I want everybody to take away from this podcast is that we're not just talking about, you know, religious freedom in some outreaching context. We're talking about it as a humanitarian, a civil right for every American. And so if you're not going to give it to me, then you're not giving it to anybody else. And if I'm not giving it to you, then I'm not going to receive it. It's really just that simple. And that's what I tell the students every time they come into the office. Like, it's amazing that the golden rule is what I fall back on. After we've talked about all these legal and historical contexts, I just fall back on treat people how you want to be treated. I think we can solve a lot of the problems that we have that way. And religious liberty definitely can be solved in that manner.
Thank you, Charles. Let's take a quick break. We are back in segment 3 of this podcast discussion, where we often talk about how we see religion respected in our culture, sometimes in books or movies or music. And I have to say, Amanda and Charles will not be surprised that I have not done a lot of extra reading and movie watching in the last week. We are very busy at BJC, and that's understandable, but we do have our eyes wide open. And I think I'll mention again, I noted that there had been more religious activism and participation in the protest. Who knows if there's more, but there's been more media attention on that. And I would recommend the article by Reuters that the New York Times published that talked about this groundswell of religious activism. And I mention it in this segment because it again really shows religious diversity in America. And I think how our religious liberty tradition allows religious diversity to flourish. And if we look around and we have our ears open and our eyes open, we'll see a variety of different kinds of religious leaders and different kinds of faith leading people to activism. This article notes a growing groundswell, and it noted Mitt Romney participating. That caught my attention, as everyone else is, in the political significance of that, but also because we think about Mitt Romney and coming from a minority religious perspective and how that might mean that he is quicker to understand the importance of religious groups speaking out and understanding Black Lives Matter and what people mean by that and how important it is for people of various religious backgrounds to participate in this moment. I don't know, Charles, have you had a chance to read a book or go to the movies this week?
Yeah, it's funny, Holly, I get comfort in nonfiction. So I read heavy books that actually most people are like, that's not helping you get away from anything. And so the last book I just finished actually last night was Long Shot, The Triumphs and Struggles of an NBA Freedom Fighter, about Craig Hodges, who was a part of the 1991 and 1992 World Champion Chicago Bulls. And he was actually traded during his time in the NBA because he was seen as somebody that was getting involved with the Nation of Islam, even though he never claimed it. And he actually went to an event sponsored by Minister Farrakhan. And after that event, the Milwaukee Bucks actually traded him. And then when he won a championship with the Chicago Bulls, he showed up to the White House for the formal invitation to congratulate them on winning their championship. He showed up in a dashiki, and it caught the attention of everybody. But he also showed up with a letter, a handwritten letter, to give to President George H.W. Bush, demanding that he do more to address the racism and economic inequalities in America. And so you just opposed to what's going on right now. This was the early 90s when he was trying to get these things pushed across. And he actually was pretty much kicked out of the league at age 32. He never got a job to play again, even though he was the 3-time defending 3-point champion at the All-Star game in the NBA. So
he got kicked out for what reason?
His association with or thought of association with Nation of Islam, and also his fight for inequality and his not keeping his mouth closed, pushing people. He wanted to boycott the first game of the NBA Finals after the Rodney King situation. He actually went to Michael Jordan and Magic Johnson and asked them to, hey, let's boycott. And both of them backed away from doing that because he was trying to bring this issue to light. And so he, the word got around on him, and he was never played again in the league after 1992.
Well, Charles, that is a perfect example of how people can, you know, see in a book or in a movie or something, a story that helps us understand our freedoms and the different ways that people use them. And I bet our listeners, a lot of them might be thinking what I'm thinking now, which is, yeah, there's more to come out of the sports world and this interaction between race and religious liberty and religion. So thanks for bringing that up. Yeah. What about you, Amanda?
Well, I was just thinking also just how current that is. I mean, that was almost 30 years ago, and just what a different reaction we're seeing right now, you know, in the streets and activism and but we didn't see that much difference just a few years ago, right? That it just, this tidal wave of change that we have witnessed over just a number of weeks in our country, and what a current book that is. So I'm glad you shared it with us.
It's amazing that the change in Michael Jordan, because he was trying to get Michael Jordan to do a lot of things back then. Michael Jordan was asked, you know, what he thought about the Rodney King situation. And he said he needed to investigate it a little more. He didn't know. And just this past week, Jordan and Jordan Brand donated $100 million to the cause. So even the change in athletes being able to say, you know what, I need to say something. I need to stand up for this. And my brand is not bigger than the lives of people in America.
Well, thank you, Charles. Thank you for joining us on the podcast today. And I did want to take this opportunity to go ahead and invite our listeners again to a special BJC event on Friday, June 26th at 12 noon Eastern. We are having our virtual BJC luncheon. This is an annual event. We talked quite a bit earlier in our conversation about our luncheon speech from 5 years ago. This year's luncheon speech, I think, will also speak to our moment. We have author and scholar Robert P. Jones, who will be joining us to talk about his new book, which is titled White Too Long, The Legacy of White Supremacy in American Christianity. So definitely a timely topic for us to discuss. He is going to be in conversation with political journalist Joy Reid of MSNBC. So we are going to include a link to register for the luncheon in our show notes. And I also wanted to invite our listeners to join us after this one-hour program for a special Facebook Live conversation hosted by our own Charles Watson, who will be reacting and talking through this topic. So check out our show notes for links on how you can participate and join that conversation. That brings us to the close of this episode of Respecting Religion. Thanks for inviting us back into your home or earbuds during this time of social distancing. For more details on what we discussed today, including links to the many articles we mentioned, check out the show notes that go with this episode.
And tune in again next week. We release episodes in this podcast series each Thursday. You can see a list of all of these on our website. Visit bjconline.org/respectingreligion. And be sure to subscribe to the BJC podcast so you don't miss an episode. We're on all the major platforms.
Let us know what you think of the show on social media. We're on Twitter and Instagram at BJC on the Hill. And you can follow me on Twitter at Amanda Tyler BJC. And get to know us. Visit our website at bjconline.org to see how we've been working for faith, freedom for all since 1936.
And join us again next week for a new conversation, Respecting Religion.